Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said, because in general, I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed, because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex.
It's good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They turn our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. The military and the monetary use the media as intermediaries. They are determined to keep the citizens secondary. They make so many decisions that are arbitrary.
Thank you very much, Richard, and I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
They took the honor from the honorary, they took the dignity from the dignitaries, they took the secrets from the secretary, but they left the bitch. An obituary. The military and the monetary from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the fucking vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. War in the desert sometimes sure is scary, but they beamed out the war to all their subsidiaries, tried to make so damn insane a worthy adversary, keeping the citizens secondary, scaring old folks into coronaries. The military and the monetary from thousands of miles in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary kept us all wondering if all of this was really truly necessary. We've got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. We only work for peace. If everyone believed in peace the way they say they do, we'd have peace. The only thing wrong with peace is that you can't make no money from it.
In short, they seek total and quiet control of the entire world. And the CFR is their most visible conduit for carrying out that agenda.
Peace ain't coming this way. We should not allow ourselves to be misled by talk of entering a time of peace. Peace is not the absence of war, it is the absence of the rumors of war and the threats of war and the preparation for war. Peace is not the absence of war, it is a time when we will all bring ourselves closer to each other, closer to building a structure that is unique within ourselves, because we have finally come to peace within ourselves. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning parts of the planet into a cemetery. What you gonna do? Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Say, what you gonna do? We hounded the Ayatollah religiously. Bombed Libya and killed Gaddafi's son hideously. We turned our back on our allies, the Panamanians, and saw Ali North selling guns to the Iranians. Watched Gorbachev slaughtering Lithuanians. We better warn the Amish, they may bomb the Pennsylvanians. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery.
They got folks out there working for war.
Two, three, four.
Make a whole lot of money, start a little trouble, it's war. Turn this planet in the north and south, it's war. Start a few rumors over there, make money with a war.
Peace. Say it to yourself.
I believe we got to work for peace. Peace ain't gonna be free. We got to work for peace. If you believe in peace,
don't go to work.
peace. Time to go to work in peace.
Now, I don't want to sound like no late night commercial, but it's a matter of fact that there are thousands of children all over the world, in Asia and Africa and South America, who need our help. When they start talking about 55 cents a day and 70 cents a day, I know a lot of folks feel as though that's not really any kind of contribution to make, but we have to give up a dollar and a half just to get in the subway nowadays. So this is a song about tomorrow and about how tomorrow can be better if we all, each one reach one, each one try to teach one. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Everyone must play a part. Everyone got to go to work. Work for peace. Spirit say work.
Hey everybody, hey, welcome back to the New World Out of Order. Hey, listen, what we were, I was kind of thinking the other day, you know, I've referenced the Council on Foreign Relations as a group in several of my other podcasts. And, you know, this happens a lot of time with me, at least. And that is, you know, if I know something, I just have a fault that I automatically assume that that everybody else does too. And I start realizing that, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations is such a significant group within our country and actually the world that I really need to take the time to make sure everybody understands, you know, who they are and what they are. They're a real group, for one thing. I know, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations, that, you know, the name of that group is floated around a lot of conspiracy theory sites all the time. And, you know, there's a lot of just propaganda, disinformation put out there about the Council on Foreign Relations. And actually, they put their own out as well. But, you know, just want to sit here and kind of talk to you about what the Council on Foreign Relations is. It's officially, according to them, it's a think tank that is comprised of, you know, the elite of ex-government officials, the elite of academia, and the elite of media, primarily. They're a promotional arm of the ruling elite of the United States. Their purpose is to move forward the agenda of the New World Order. Now, you know, the New World Order, what that is a the ultimate goal is a one world government with a one world economy. You know, it essentially gets rid of all borders, you know, all, you know, there will not be any individual countries anymore. You know, they might be just in name, but as far as, you know, the law and money are concerned, everybody's all one. The bankers, and this is actually stated, they think that, you know, the best people that should run the world as far as government economics are bankers. They do so. It's a very narcissistic approach. It's very self-centered because they're looking at benefiting themselves. And at the same time, they're actually looking at suppressing others. So they're not really looking at and trying to benefit man. And improve the quality of life in man in general, just that of themselves. So, you know, to understand that the most influential people in America, you know, how they came to be members of an organization working purposefully to overthrow the Constitution, I mean, you got to go back a long time ago, you know, early 1900s. You know, and realize that a ruling power elite does indeed control the U.S. government from behind the scenes. And this has been, you know, admitted by, you know, many Americans that are in a position to understand this. There was one, it was an ex-Supreme Court Justice, Felix Frankfurter, And this was back in the 1940s. I think he was a justice from 1939 to 1962. And he said, the real rulers of Washington are invisible and exercise power from behind the scenes. He said that in a letter to Franklin Roosevelt. And then, of course, Franklin Roosevelt wrote back. He said, the real truth of the matter is, as you know and I know, that a financial element in the large centers has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. And, of course, we all know that Andrew Jackson, he was not a member of this faction, and he was not, in fact, he was against it. He actually, he's the one that actually brought an end to the Second Bank of the United States, which was, you know, the Rothschilds' second effort to have a privately owned central bank in the United States. So, anyway, back in, 1954, there was a senator, William Jenner. He warned in a speech, he said, you know, outwardly, we have a constitutional government. We have operating within our government and political system another body representing another form of government, a bureaucratic elite which believes our Constitution is outmoded. And then if you go back and realize, you need to revisit Baron Rothschild, his infamous quote from many years ago, 1800s. He wrote, give me control over a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. So that's when you need to kind of take a closer look. And there again, what we're trying to do is trying to get you to understand what the Council on Foreign Relations is, you know, back from the early days and the conceptual building blocks that it was built up on. And, you know, hopefully we're going to be able to paint a pretty good picture for you, I hope. If not, you know, please go out there and just do your own research on the Council on Foreign Relations. So anyway, you know, Rothschild says, give me control over a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. So all you have to do to control a government is to have control over a nation's money. You know, you need a central bank with a monopoly over the supply and of money and credit. And, of course, this was done a long time ago in Western Europe with the creation of the Bank of England. That was like one of the first, you know, Rothschild-owned central banks. That was like the granddaddy of them. Now, you go back to a professor at Georgetown, and I encourage you to go read the writings of this guy, Dr. Carroll Quigley. He was actually Bill Clinton's mentor while Clinton was at Georgetown. And he wrote about the goals of the investment bankers that control the central banks. He said that, you know, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole, controlled in a feudalistic fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert by secret agreements, arrived at in frequent private meetings and conferences. One thing that you'll be interested to find out as far as the credibility of Dr. Carroll Quigley is Dr. Carroll Quigley was actually an insider of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a trusted member and allowed to come in and document the efforts of the Council on Foreign Relations. So he's actually an insider for a long time, and he really found out what was really going on in there. In other words, from the outside, if you go on their website, look at especially their latest video that promotes themselves, which they have Angelina Jolie in it, which unfortunately she's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. But there again, that's not to say that she is a promoter of the New World Order or One World Government, but it's not to say she isn't either. But there again, you must understand that the word is out. The word is getting out on the Council on Foreign Relations. So they have to do some PR, you know, damage repair. So, you know, for them going out and actually recruiting someone like Angelina Jolie, I can fully understand that. But there again, behind the scenes, maybe she is a really insider and supporter of this cabal. The membership of the Council on Foreign Relations is approximately 4,000 people. You can go out on their website. You can get the member list as of 2011. Check them out. It's like I said, it's about 4,000 people, so it's a lot of people to go through. There's other sites that can provide you more reduced list of the more influential elite people, you know, the people, the real elites in the media that are members, and the real elites in academia, the real elites in finance. And that's the ones you kind of want to look at. Although, you know, if you've got time to go research every 4,000 individual member, please, by all means, do that and let me know what you find. So, but anyway, let's get back here. Here's the premise. Here's the understanding that, you know, if you let me control a nation's money and I care not who makes its laws. That's where it started. If we go back to the first inception of a attempt of a central bank in the United States, it was the Bank of the United States. The first bank was abolished by Thomas Jefferson when he was president. He did not renew their charter, and then the second bank in the United States, which was the second attempt, was abolished by Andrew Jackson. And he wrote that the bold effort the present bank had made to control the government, the distress it had wantonly produced, are but premonitions of the fate that awaits the American people should they be deluded into a perpetuation of the institution or the establishment of another like it. Yeah, so he's just telling you, Americans, don't be duped. I don't care what they say, how they sugarcoat it. Don't be duped into allowing another privately owned central bank into this country that has the power and the authority to create and control the nation's money. That's what he was warning. You know, Thomas Jefferson, he wrote, you know, the central bank is an institution of the most deadly hostility existing against the principles and form of our Constitution. If the American people allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, and first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers founded. So anyway, you know, there are many, many quotes from our leaders and in persons of key positions of government and finance. There are many, many quotes throughout history of people trying to warn the American society, the American people, against these central banks. Well, unfortunately, the bankers and the Rothschilds, and there again, that's what I normally call them, because they were centrally controlled by the Rothschilds, and I really personally believe they are still centrally controlled by the Rothschilds, although the other parties involved, the Warburgs, the Jacobs, the Schiffs, those families are still very well involved, and I'm not sure if they have any more or any less power than the Rothschilds do. But our earlier presidents, as you know, just quoted, they warned us about these. And these are two presidents who actually had the first attempts of these banks shut down. You know, if you look back, you know, the U.S., they managed to do without a central bank, you know, until the early 1900s. You know, Charles Lindbergh, when he was a congressman, he said that, you know, the money trust caused the 1907 panic and thereby, you know, forced Congress to create a national monetary commission. And that was headed by Senator Nelson Aldrich, who was the father-in-law of John Rockefeller. And, of course, we know that Rockefeller is part of the central banking movement. He is part of the Rothschilds. He is actually a family member of the Rothschilds by marriage. He is not by blood, but he is by marriage. And they are a huge believer in keeping their operations within the family. Even though it was unconstitutional, as only, you know, as the Constitution says, that the Congress shall have power to coin money, regulate the value thereof. The Federal Reserve Act passed in 1913, supposedly to stabilize the economy and prevent further panics. You know, Lindbergh, he even told Congress, he said, you know, this act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth, the invisible government by the money power. It's proven to exist by the money trust investigation, and it will be legalized. And then the Great Depression, and then numerous recessions later, all occurred afterwards. So now you can kind of see that they are getting control of a nation's money. I care not who makes its laws as long as I have control of the money, right? You know, now we're into the early 1900s. And then there was a Congressman, Lewis McFadden. He was a very staunch fighter in opposition against the central banks. So now he was a House committee on member of the House Committee on Banking and Currency. He stated that when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, the people of the United States did not perceive that a world banking system was being set up here. A super state controlled by international bankers and industrialists acting together to enslave the world. Every effort has been made by the Fed to conceal its powers, but the truth is the Fed has usurped the government. Now, that was Lewis McFadden, chairman of the House Committee on Banking and Currency back in the 1920s. Back in the 1920s, it was fully understood by the powers to be back then. Unfortunately, it was not understood by the people, that this information was not conveyed to the people, and it was attempted to by these people. But there again, their only means of communicating to the people at that time was through the media. And the media was already owned at this time by the Rockefellers, the majority of the mainstream media. The major circulation newspapers was already owned. This happened and started in 1907 or 1909, when Jacob Schiff actually came over here after meeting with his relative Rothschild, and instructed, you know, Rothschild and others that they needed to take control of the media. So anyway, so that was the only way that they had to get the word out. So even though these people were you know, doing everything but standing up and shouting about this, it didn't really get out. That's where we today have a huge advantage with the internet and the just our, you know, huge leaps forward in the availability of communication devices. So anyway, that's why the message is easier to get out now without the mainstream media, because mainstream media is still owned and controlled by the elites and the members of Council on Foreign Relations. I think it's of the top 20 media corporations in the country, 18 of them are the owners or the CEOs and or presidents of 18 of them are members on the Council on Foreign Relations. And there again, Council on Foreign Relations is main goal is for one world government, one world economy, and for the dissolving of America and the destruction and elimination of the Constitution. Talk about the Fed, the Federal Reserve System. You know, there again, just a reminder, it is private. It's not part of the federal government. A good activist, and I call her an activist, she's a journalist, but her name is Debbie Kidd. And she's done a lot of research and writings in regards to a lot of, you know, taxation, and then also with, you know, as far as Council on Foreign Relations and the Federal Reserve. But Federal Reserve and taxation are her big areas. But I like her. I recommend going out and checking her out. Debbie Kidd, that's DevyKidd, Debbie Kidd. So she had an article called Why Bankrupt America. She explained it real well. Talks about how the Federal Reserve pays the Bureau of Engraving and Printing approximately $23 for every $1,000 Treasury notes that's printed. For $10,100 notes, which is $1 million, that would cost the Federal Reserve $230. You know, so this is a loan. So they secure a pledge of collateral, and that's equal to the face value of the treasury bond from the government. And the collateral is actually our land and our labor and the assets of our country. And they're collected by the agents of the Federal Reserve. Now, you might know these agents as under a different term. They're called the IRS. You know, by authorizing the Federal Reserve to regulate and create money and which is giving them control of inflation. Congress gave private banks power to create profits. So, as Charles Lindbergh put it, this new law will create inflation whenever the trusts want inflation. Whenever the banks want inflation, they'll create it. They can unload the stocks on the people at high prices during the excitement and then bring on a panic and buy them and buy them back down at low prices. He said the day of reckoning is only a few years removed. Well, that day came in 1929 when the stock market crashed. And that's where you need to understand that the Great Depression of 1929 was not just an accident. That was created by the Federal Reserve, just as our current economic situation was created by the world banking elite, who, and if you're really listening here, you understand that the world banking elite is the real government of the world today. I was talking about how the agents of the Federal Reserve is the IRS. And that's where you need to look back. One of the most important powers given to the Fed, and that was the right to buy and sell the government securities, and then provide loans to member banks, member Federal Reserves, there's actually 12 of them, so they might also purchase them. So this provided another built-in mechanism for the profit to the banks. If government debt was increased, the banks profited. All that was needed was a method to pay off the debt. So they had the tool to create this debt because they had the power to create and loan money, and they had the full authority to create and loan money to the federal government. And of course, we all know that this money they created wasn't based on anything. It came out of thin air. So what they needed was a way for the country to start paying off its debt. So, in the repayment of the debt, that is the profit for the banks. This is how the Council on Foreign Relations, the banking elite, this cabal, this is how they made their money. So what they did, the Federal Reserve Act was passed in 1913. Well, it's just coincidental, I'm sure. But the passage of the income tax was in 1913. Now, see, the income tax, that's the way to get the money back to the Federal Reserve. That's how the government pays our debt off. Now, in a previous podcast, I was telling you how back in 1984, according to the Grace Commission, 100% of all monies from income tax goes to pay the national debt. None of the money collected from income tax goes to pay for any government service. It all goes 100% to paying off the national debt. And now we understand that the national debt is a mechanism put in place by the Federal Reserve for them to make money and to control the country. So every bit of your income tax goes to the Federal Reserve, which are private bankers, and this was their sole source of funding for a long time. They've since been crafty enough to find other ways to provide additional funding. We'll talk about that in a second. So anyway, if you remember back, a national income tax was declared unconstitutional, and that was back in 1895. The Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutional. So what they did is they went out and they made a constitutional amendment. And there again, this constitutional amendment, 16th Amendment, was proposed in Congress by Senator Nelson Aldrich. There again, he's the insider for the Rothschilds. As presented to the American people, it seemed like it was a reasonable enough. Income tax is only going to be 1% of income under $20,000 with an assurance that it would never increase. Now, of course, we know how that works, right? Just look back at this, the income tax, look at the Social Security, all those promises. So just, you know, remember that when you're actually promoting maybe the national health care, you know, how they're saying that's going to work. You know, it's never going to work that way. It'll always be changed. So with the means to loan enormous sums to the government, Federal Reserve, a method to repay the debt, which was the income tax, and an escape from taxation for the wealthy, because, you know, the wealthy, they were not going to, they were in on the 16th Amendment. You know, they were part of the people who wanted this because they're part of the banking elite, right? So they knew they needed to get the money out of the government to have them repay the debt. So they created the income tax, right? Well, there's no way that they were going to have themselves exposed to the income tax because that's just taking money out of their pocket. So what they did, and the Rothschilds did this, they created these foundations, these tax-exempt foundations. So now we had the means to create debt in the government, that was Federal Reserve, and we had a method to repay that debt, which was income tax, and then an escape for the wealthy to participate in the taxation, and that was the foundations. So we had everything in place here for the system to start working, and there again we're going back to the Rothschild quote. Give me control of a nation's money. I care not who makes its laws. So now we have in place a methods to control the money, put the government nation in debt, and to suck out the money as profits. So now what they needed was an excuse to put the government in debt. A reason, an excuse for the government to need to go out and borrow a bunch of money. Well, just by coincidence, I'm sure, the very next year, 1914, World War I began. And after the American participation in this war, the national debt rose from $1 billion, where it started off at. It was $25 billion by the end of the war. At this time, actually, it was a little after this time, but it was 1934. Brigadier General Smedley Bradley wrote a book, War is a Racket. And this book is like 70 pages, okay? It's written in 1934. Brigadier General now, very highly respected Brigadier General at the time, read this book. Now, he's coming from, and he only knows about the perspective from the military side of this, but he knew it and he understood it because he participated in a lot of the higher level discussions of reasons to go to war, I guess. And anyway, I'm not going to read that book. It's actually on, I think it's one of the ones I reviewed on my website, NWO3.com. And I've actually got it available on my little bookstore I have on my website as well, so. It's like 70 pages, people. You can read it while you're taking a crap. You need to read this. And then what I'm telling you now is going to really make sense. So they put all these methods in place, and they said, okay, now we got to make them work. So just coincidentally, I'm sure, which, you know, I'm being sarcastic here, next year World War I started, and during the duration of the war, our national debt rose from $1 billion to $25 billion. The national debt and the ability to create and control money being outside of the hands of Congress, both of those items are unconstitutional. They are illegal even today. Okay, now Woodrow Wilson was the guy who was the president that allowed this all to happen, and he was bought out, but I'm not really going to get into that. So there again, you know, the main topic here is the Council on Foreign Relations trying to get you to understand how they're working this, their agenda towards one world government. And it's all about, goes back to the original bad boy, Baron Rothschild. Give me control of a nation's currency, and I care not who makes its laws. Well, they were finally successful again for the third try in America with the Federal Reserve Act. And they had their doo-doo together a little bit more here. Not only did they create the Federal Reserve Act, they created the income tax by passing the 16th Amendment. And then, of course, they instigated the war, World War I. That starts the money flowing in their direction. And, of course, if you look back on all this, you know, the War of 1812 was caused, and it was actually threatened to Andrew Jackson. Hey, if you do not renew this charter, we're going to forget the exact terms that was mentioned to him. But if you do not renew this charter, you will find yourself in the midst of a most disastrous war. And that was in 1812, or actually 1813. I'm sorry, that was in 1811. I apologize. It was in 1811. Well, the next year, it was the War of 1812. Andrew Jackson shut down that charter. War of 1812 coincidentally just sprung up, even though they told you that was going to happen. I'm giving you probably a little bit more detailed look on the Council on Foreign Relations than I really intended here. That's the agenda that started it. Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. That's still the root. That is the concept. Now, how they implement the concept, that's what we just talked about. Putting in the Federal Reserve, 16th Amendment, allow them to collect income taxes, and then also the avoidance of the rich to participate in the income tax, and that was the tax-exempt foundations that were allowed. Okay, now the Council on Foreign Relations itself was incorporated in 1921, and it was started by a guy named Colonel House, and then J.P. Morgan, John Rockefeller, Paul Warburg, Otto Kahn, and Jacob Schiff. And those are the people who pretty much started it. Now, one of the things that Professor Quigley had characterized about the CFR was, you know, a front group for J.P. Morgan and Company in association with the very small American Roundtable Group. And over time, Morgan's influence was lost to the Rockefellers. He's the one that really gained control of it. He's the one who actually found that one world government fit their philosophy of business as well. So, John D. Rockefeller Sr. said, you know, competition is a sin, and a global monopoly fits their needs as they grow internationally. You know, during the 1920s, you know, America, they enjoyed a decade of huge prosperity, fueled by the ease of availability of credit. And then between 1923 and 1929, the Federal Reserve expanded the money supply by 62%. It dumped huge amounts of money into circulation. And then when the stock market crashed, you know, all the peons like me and you, now they suffered. Now, the insiders didn't. They didn't suffer at all. They knew what was going on. They'd already dumped their stocks. So it was in 1929 that Paul Warburg, he issued a tip that the crash was coming, and the large investors, they all got out of the market. So now that they still had all their money, they started buying back all these other companies, you know, for a fraction of what they were worth prior to the stock market collapse. So this was a huge transfer of wealth at this point. There again, it was by design. So the crash, it kind of paved the way for the man that Wall Street had groomed for the presidency, which was FDR. He was portrayed as a man of the people, when in reality, Roosevelt's family had been involved in, you know, New York banking since the 1900s, early 1900s, early 1800s, I'm sorry. So, you know, this, it goes back a long way. You know, the one of the things that FDR was most famous for was his New Deal. And it can only be financed through, you know, by borrowing. So in effect, those who had caused the Depression, they loaned America the money to get out of the Depression. Then, you know, through the National Recovery Administration, and that was proposed by a guy named Bernard Baruch in 1930, they were put in charge of regulating the economy. FDR appointed Baruch to run the NRA. And he was assisted by a Council on Foreign Relations member, a guy named Gerald Swope. Now, since the during the FDR days, Council on Foreign Relations, they pretty much captured the political portion of the U.S. You know, they started really transplanting a lot of their members into government, into the administrations. Yeah, I know this is kind of getting long-winded here. You know, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to finish up with some quotes here because I know this right here is probably getting long-winded. You're probably losing a little bit of interest. so, you know, there's just... here's a quote from Admiral Chester Ward. And he was he's very famous for his critiques of the CFR and the Federal Reserve and... He was actually a member of the CFR for 10 years or so. But then he became a huge critic of the CFR. And he printed a book in 75, you know, called Kissinger on the Couch. One of the things he said in the book was, "The most powerful cliques in these elitist groups have one objective in common. They want to bring about the surrender of the sovereignty and national independence of the United States." Admiral Chester Ward. Now, this is a guy who was a member of the Council for Foreign Relations for over 10 years. He knew what was going on. He was a trusted insider. But I'm just assuming that he didn't like what he was realizing. So as he got out, he became one of their biggest critics. Another quote here was from James Warburg. He was the son of Paul Warburg. Paul Warburg was one of the founders of the CFR. So his son, James Warburg, who was part of FDR's cabinet, he testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee back in 1950. He said, "We shall have one world government, whether or not you like it. By conquest or consent." That's pretty brazen. He came out and told Senate Foreign Relations Committee that February 17th, 1950. Now, is this a delusional American speaking just crazy gibberish? Okay, like I said, I'm gonna read some quotes from having to do with CFR. And or CFR members that have made these quotes. Starts off with David Rockefeller, who says, "We are on the verge of a global transformation. All we need is the right major crisis, and the nations will accept the New World Order." And this was prior to, this was actually in the early 1900s, so it was definitely prior to 9/11. George H.W. Bush, out of these troubled times, our objective, a New World Order, can emerge. Today, that new world is struggling to be born, a world quite different from the one we have known. Now, that was in a speech before the United Nations. Here's one by Senator Barry Goldwater back in 1979. "The Council on Foreign Relations is the American branch of a society which originated in England, and it believes national boundaries should be obliterated and one world rule established. The Trilateral Commission is international and is intended to be the vehicle for multinational consolidation of the commercial and banking interest by seizing control of the political government of the United States." And that's the other, you know, evil group that I think is the Trilateral Commission, and we'll discuss those later podcasts. Some additional, here's Dr. Johann Koppel. He's a PhD, former German Defense Ministry official, and advisor to former NATO Secretary. The interest behind the Bush administration, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, founded by Brzezinski for David Rockefeller, and the Bilderberger Group, have prepared for and are now moving to implement open world dictatorship within the next 5 years. They are not fighting against terrorists. They're fighting against citizens. So that was, I don't have a date on that one, but that was fairly recent. That was within the last 10 years. And there again, that was Dr. Johannes Koppel. He's a former German Defense Ministry official. He's a former advisor to NATO Secretary General Manfred Warner. Read that again. The interest behind the Bush administration, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberger Group, they have prepared for and are now moving to implement open world dictatorship within the next 5 years. They're not fighting against terrorists. They're fighting against citizens. And that's why you'll start understanding that the war on terror is a farce. It's not real. It's a smokescreen. Here's Chester Ward again. He was a rear admiral and former Navy judge advocate, 1956 to 1960, and he was also a CFR member. The main purpose of the Council on Foreign Relations is promoting the disarmament of U.S. sovereignty and national independence, and the submergence into an all-powerful one-world government. That is from an ex-CFR member, Admiral Chester Ward. Now here's our good old buddy, our pal, President Woodrow Wilson, who was actually allowed to be have himself bought out and allowed the Federal Reserve Act to be passed. Here's a quote by him. "We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of a small group of dominant men." Now, I don't know if you recall that Woodrow Wilson actually apologized to the country after he left office. He apologized for actually allowing the Federal Reserve Act to be passed. Now here is David Rockefeller, big one. Now if you haven't listened to any of the other ones, I need you to listen to these next two. Here's David Rockefeller at the Bilderberg meeting, June 1991, Baden, Germany. "We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the lights of publicity during these years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a new world government. The supernatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in past centuries." There he is thanking the media for not reporting on their activities, their plans, and their activities. Now here's Mr. Rockefeller again. And really listen to this one. This was in his autobiography. It's called Memoirs. It's actually on page 405. This one should really shake you to the core. "For more than a century, ideologic extremists at either end of the political spectrum have seized upon well-publicized incidents to attack the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim that we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interest of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it. Now, if that doesn't shake you to the core right there, I don't know what will. Now, here's a guy named William Blum. And this is, this sounds like me. Because of all the things that I've learned in the past few years, this is something that I can relate to. Anyway, a guy named William Blum said, "No matter how paranoid or conspiracy-minded you are, what the government is actually doing is worse than you can imagine." And the, you know, from everything that I've learned and from how what I continue to keep learning, it's just that is so true. That is so true. You would never imagine the things that our government is doing. But you need to understand about the groups like Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg Group, Royal Institute on International Affairs, which is the CFR equivalent over in England. You need to understand these groups. They exist, what their real purpose is. Read the history about them so you will have a better understanding of what's going on with these guys. And people, I just hope to God it's not too late. I hope it's not too late that we can stop this. So, all right, I'm going to let you go, and I appreciate you listening. Check out the website. I'll have, you know, some links on there. I'll have some articles that you can read, you know, the sources of my information from today. And, of course, everything else. I've got, you know, just a ton of articles on there. I've got alternative news links on there. Hopefully you guys are learning to get weaned off of the mainstream media and start reading some of these alternative media outlets. And then, of course, we've got some book reviews and stuff. So check it out, nwo3.com, and give me some feedback, too. I've got a contact form on there. Let me know who you are. If you're liking what you're hearing and any suggestions for any future topics, any some things that you're kind of wondering about, I'm not saying I'm definitely going to know about them, but I've been doing a lot of research over the past few years, and there's a good chance I might know a little bit about them and you might shed a little bit of light. But if not, you and I can discuss it together, and we can all learn something. So, all right, guys, thanks again for tuning in.